Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Suryoday Small Finance Bank Q1 FY22 earnings conference call hosted by Ambit Capital. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ajit Kumar from Ambit Capital Private Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Mallika. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to 1Q FY22 conference call of Suryoday Small Finance Bank. In this call, we have the entire top management team led by Mr. Bhaskar Basu, MD and CEO, Mr. Bhavin Damania, Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Narayan Rao, Chief Services Officer, Ms. Lina Devadiga, Head FP&A, Mrs. Radhika Gaur, VP Finance, Financial Analysis, Mr. Rahul Kotabage, VP Business Analytics, Mr. Chintan Shah, Investor Relations, and Mr. Amit Singh from the Investor Relations team. We thank the management team for this opportunity of hosting you on this call. The call will start with opening remarks from the management team, and then we will open up for Q&A. Now I hand over to Bhaskar sir for his opening remarks. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Ajit. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our earnings conference call for the first quarter of fiscal FY22. I hope that all of you and your loved ones are safe and well. The second wave of COVID was challenging and had impact in terms of loss of lives as well as impact on the business. Since April 2021, over 10% of our workforce, approximately 528, got infected with COVID, and we unfortunately lost two of our dear colleagues to the second wave. Although difficult, we continue to move on and focus on business. Since we last spoke on 27th May, business environment has steadily improved. Although we virtually lost 2 months of the business in the first quarter of this fiscal, since then, the June business sentiment has improved considerably in July, and we can consider see the momentum going forward in July, August. In terms of the June and July, our collections on one EMI basis improved to 70% and 79% respectively after a drop to 68% in May. Similarly, on the disbursement front, we disbursed 361 crores in Q1 FY22, but achieved the same number in the month of July itself. With local lockdowns being lifted in many places and train services, including in Mumbai, likely to be started soon, we believe that the recovery is going to be reasonably quick. We have been proactive and continue to track the vaccination amongst all our employees. We successfully concluded the first round of vaccination drive at all our offices and are scheduling the second round soon. We are engaging with employees to ensure that their family's well-being and extend financial support to them whenever and wherever required. With incremental traction from the vaccination drive from the government, we are hopeful of normalization of business environment soon. While we are hopeful of the same, we continue to practice safety protocols at all times at our offices, as well as for employees in the field. I hope you all have received our investor presentation and had the chance to go through it before the call. However, I will give a brief highlight of our performance for the quarter and the year as of date. On the business performance, our disbursement was 361 crores for the Q1 FY22, lower primarily due to the second wave of COVID-19, wherein, as I mentioned, we lost two of our dear colleagues. Business environment has subsequently improved with disbursements picking up and is evident from the numbers achieved in July. For the month of July, the disbursement was 360 crores, the same as the disbursement for the entire quarter of Q1 FY22. The business momentum continues in the month of August as well. On the collection front, similar impact has been seen. Collection efficiency on one EMI basis fell to 70% in the month of June as compared to 87% for the month of March 21, but recovered significantly to 79% in the month of July 21. Our gross advances as of June was 4,004 crores and fell marginally 4.3% since March 2021. As of end June, inclusive finance comprises of 68% of the asset book, while affordable home loans, commercial loans and secured business loans comprise of 8.1%, 8.3% and 4% respectively. As the market environment improves, we will focus on growing our book in a stable and sustained manner across all product categories and geographies. On the deposits and borrowings, our deposits grew marginally to 3,317 crores as of 30th June 2021. While the growth was flat, the granularity in our deposit base increased significantly. Retail deposits formed 86% of the total deposits as on 30th of June as compared to 80% as of 31st of March, the balance comprising of bulk deposits. Furthermore, majority of our bulk deposits are non-callable in nature. As of 30th June, 90% of our bulk deposits, that is deposit more than 2 crores, is non-callable. CASA improved to 16.2% as of 30th June as compared to 15.4% as of 31st March, showing a steady improvement in line with our strategy. The borrowings as of in June formed 25% of total liabilities. Majority was from refinancing institutions like SIDBI and NABARD. As on distribution and reach, as of end of June 2021, we had 555 branches, of which 97 branches were primarily focused on deposits, while 354 branches were asset-focused branches, and the balance comprises of rural centers. Through this branch network, the bank serviced 15.3 lakh customers, of which total asset customers were 13.3 lakh, and total liability customers were 5.6 lakhs, having an overlap of 3.6 lakh customers between assets and liabilities. On the asset quality, our GNPA increased marginally by 10 basis points to 9.5% as of 30th June, compared to a GNPA of 9.4% as of 31st March. Similarly, the net NPA showed a marginal decrease, though, to 4.5% as compared to 4.7% as of 31st March. Provision coverage ratio as of 30th June was nearly 71%. It is worthwhile to note that our GNPA and NNPA, excluding ECLGS loans, is lower at 8.9% and 3.9% respectively. Delinquency in the portfolio increased due to impact of the second wave of COVID. Collections were difficult in majority of the places across the country in April and May, which led to increased PAR. As things have normalized, the situations have improved. Of the delinquent bucket, 68% of the customers continue to be paying PAR, that is, who have paid at least one EMI in the last 2 months of May and June. The same number has improved in the month of July, and the paying PAR for the month of July is 73%. As of 30th June, we have restructured 10.5% of our total book across various schemes. Of this, total restructuring done in Q1 FY22 was 7.1%. This is excluding the recoveries. On the earnings and update, on the earnings side, net interest income increased by 116% quarter-on-quarter to 124 crores in Q1 FY22, and the NIM increased to 7.6% in this quarter as compared to 3.7% for Q4 of FY21. The growth was primarily reflected due to an impact on the last quarter numbers. Majority of the interest reversal for the full year was taken in Q4 FY21 post Supreme Court judgment on 23rd March 2021, which led to a lower interest recognition in Q4 of last year. Our other income comprises mainly of income from sale of investment of 8 crores and PSLC income of 8 crores. Though we have booked the PSLC income of 32 crores during the quarter, on amortization basis we have recognized 8 crores during the quarter. Cost of funds reduced to 7.4% in quarter one. QOQ, while cost to the income during the same period moderated to 63.1% as compared to 105.7% in the last year, though not comparable. We're reporting a loss of 48 crores for the last quarter during the primary due to lower disbursements in the quarter and after considering a technical write-off of approximately 79 crores and an additional provision on restructuring of rupees 28 crores. As of June 21, we continue to hold a floating provision of 91 crores on the books. We continue to remain highly capitalized. As of 30th June 2021, our capital adequacy was 52.1% as compared to 51.5% as of 31st March. Tier 1 of this constitutes 47.6% and Tier 2 comprises of 4.5%. With this, I would like to hand over to the team for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We would like to remind participants that you may press star 1 to ask a question. The first question is from the line of Ayushi Somani from SBI General Insurance. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good afternoon. Good evening, sir. I just wanted to know, this credit cost, you have already provided 110 crores from the current quarter. So how will you guide for the FY22 and FY23 on the credit cost side?
Yeah, thank you. In terms of our overall 90 plus as of 30th of June, was approximately 240 crores, 90 plus, whereas our GNPA was around 380 crores. As we have presented, around approximately 67.9% of our delinquent customers in the 1 plus bucket are paying par. That is, they paid at least one installment during the month of May and June, which happened to be one of the tough quarters in terms of the impact of the wave 2. The focus is in terms of keeping in touch with the customer, considering that they are most of the loans or short tenor loans. As long as we are in touch with the customer and are able to keep collecting at least one EMI every 1 month, 1.5 months, the tenor may get extended, it may get tagged as an NPA, but fairly confident that around closer to 70% of the delinquent customers will be able to keep in touch, and that was as of June. As of July, the momentum has picked up. So while we resist from giving any clear-cut credit guidance, what we would like to kind of refer to is that broadly we are kind of have a handle in terms of what had to have a negative impact as of June, and we expect that the momentum will be positive, both in terms of collections as well as in terms of business in this quarter, which is Q2 of FY22.
Okay, and a few couple of questions more. So even your gross advance yield has been changed if we compare on YOY basis. Earlier it was 22% and now it is 18%. With change in AUM mix, like more focusing on secured loans, what is expected to be the year-end yield on gross advances?
In terms of our microfinance portfolio, inclusive finance portfolio continues to be upwards of 24%, except for the Smile OD, which is the overdraft product, which we are currently offering at 18%. The 18% you see is also an impact in terms of not recognizing the income on the GNPA part of the portfolio, which is approximately 9% of the overall book. And on a yield basis for the incremental disbursements, we continue to see upwards of 20% in terms of our yields.
Yeah, okay. And also, you already mentioned that we have seen the good growth in AUM on the July month. So can we expect this growth to be continued in the upcoming month?
Yes, the short answer is yes. We are seeing momentum continuing in the month of August. In fact, a little more accelerated than we saw in July. So we expect the momentum to continue, not kind of caveating without any impact of, if at all ever, of wave 3. On a normal basis, we see the momentum continuing this quarter.
Okay, that's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prabal Gandhi from Antique Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Sir, am I audible?
Yes, very much.
Thank you, sir. So first question is on the write-off. So what's our write-off policy in general across various segments?
For the, let Bhavin do the answering, but what we have been doing is trying to recognize whatever the stress that is really coming in terms of write-off. This is a little different from the usual policy we would have kind of guided ourselves to in terms of normal circumstances. So wherever we are recognizing a customer is not paying, and specifically out of our data, where the customer is not only not paying us, but also not paying anybody else where he has borrowed from, we are taking a conservative approach in terms of providing for, or in cases like in JLG, writing off of the loans, which we did in Q1. Pavan, to add anything?
Yeah, I think as Bhaskar mentioned, in fact, as a policy, we also do only technical write-offs. We are not following actual write-offs. So the field level still continue to see the customer in the books, so they continue to carry out the collection as well.
But for the MFI book, any typical number of days after which we write off the loan, for example, 180 days or maybe after 1 year we completely write off a loan, anything of that sort that we follow?
No, so we don't have a policy, as I said, as Bhaskar also said. So we go by the data where the customers are not able to pay us or to the anyone else in the industry. Then accordingly, we take a call, and based on the field level feedback we receive from them, whether the customers will be recoverable from a particular pocket. So it's not based on a specific policy for 90 days, 180 days, 360 days. It's, we go by the data we have from the industry level and the data we own, our proprietary data for the customers.
For instance, if you look at our 90+, it constituted around 6% of the POS, and the paying customers out of this 90+ was around 25.6%, which is they paid at least one installment in the month of either May or June. And that was one of the toughest quarters, though June was an improvement over May. So in July, if we kind of keep the momentum, the intent is to really, as Bhavin mentioned, while there are technical write-offs, the field continues to kind of be in touch with the customer and continue to look at customers as paying customers.
Got it, got it. Sir, and how much was the ECLGS as a percentage of book at the end of this quarter?
So we have a total ECLGS book of around 120 crores on the entire book of 4,000 crores, so roughly 3%.
And from the disclosures, we understand that some of the ECLGS book has also slipped or has gone into the NPA. Is that correct?
So this is mainly because of the cross provisioning. ECLGS themselves has not gone that much bad. So it's mainly because the customer would have defaulted on the original loan on which we would have given the ECLGS. Because of that, we have to do the cross provisioning and also classify the ECLGS as the NPA. But ECLGS themselves would be hardly anything compared to the overall number.
Okay, okay. But just want to understand the process. So in case the ECLGS loan goes bad, so we have to apply on the portal and henceforth the money would be credited in our account. Is that the correct understanding?
Yeah, that's right. So it's a, there's a process which you have to follow as per the government guidelines. So we have to upload on the portal. Then we also demonstrate that we have done all kind of recovery process. Then after demonstrating those as per the process defined, then we can get the claim back. But it's not very lengthy process, I would say that. So we already started the process. But amount is hardly anything in our books. Only 20 crores is which has been there. So anyways, we start the collection process.
But I think the first 75% will be credited and then we have to demonstrate and then the remaining 25 will be given by the government. Or from the starting itself, we have to demonstrate the process.
No, no. So after account goes bad, then only we have to start. So in fact, you are right. So after the account become NPA, then we have to start demonstrating that we are trying to get a recovery. So after the reasonable demonstration, then we get 75%. And then after there are certain processes we have to follow, then we get remaining 25%.
Sir, and on the restructuring, so incrementally we had 7% of the restructuring in the current quarter. What's a typical moratorium for a customer here?
2 months to 3 months is what the general moratorium would be.
So for this time, July, for whatever the restructuring we have done at the end of the June, so our collection efficiency is not adjusted in the month of July. In fact, we have raised the billing as well in the month of the July. So if you compare to the other published numbers of the other SOBs or whatever, that is not directly comparable because we have a demand generated. In fact, we have not given a moratorium. Hardly there will be some loans, but very limited in the other than microfinance loans.
And what is the pipeline of restructuring?
It is still evaluation, so it's an ongoing process. So it's very difficult to say at this point in time because we take a stock generally before the end of the quarter.
But where we do restructuring is for customers who have exhibited circumstantial default than intentional default. So where the customers have been paying, but it has kind of got spillover or spilling over purely because of the time lag is where we are kind of approaching the customers or our customers are approaching us. It is not across the board restructuring for all customers who are not able to pay or rather who are not paid.
And then lastly, on the disbursement side, so we had pretty good disbursement of 360 odd crores in the July. Is the momentum continuing in the August as well? We are halfway in the August now.
Yeah, the momentum is continuing in August. As I said, that what we saw in July, the momentum seems to be absolutely continuing in August as we kind of speak.
All right. Thank you, sir, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nikhil Valecha from SBI Life Insurance. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Sir, is there any overlap in the restructured and SMA account?
No, so we don't have any overlap. As of now, between the restructuring and the SMA. There will be hardly which will be sitting, but percentage will not be very high.
Except in commercial vehicle.
Okay. And secondly, we have made this floating provision of 91 crore and 5 crore on restructured loans. Is it fair to say that the remaining 86 crore is for the SMA pool that we have made?
So we have 91 crores floating provision on the microfinance, which is separate, and the restructuring book we have made nearly 36 crores of a provision as at date I'm talking about, and during the quarter we have made nearly 28 crores. And this 420 crores of a restructuring, which is includes also the NPA restructuring, which continues to be NPA, so which is around 53 crores of a pool. So wherein we also apply the IRAC norms and make the provisions as well. So I think numbers are 36 crores and 91, not 5 and 91.
Sorry, so 91 minus 36 is, this is the provision we have made for SMA pool.
No, no, so these are all independent things, so these are not, so it's not included, so 36 crores is not part of 91 crores. So 91 crores, we as a policy is to make floating provision since last 3 years on the microfinance pool, which is completely separate from the restructuring.
Okay, so currently we don't have any provision on the SMA pool.
No, so currently we don't have, except for, as Bhaskar mentioned, there will be some overlap of minor amount of commercial vehicle in the SMA, but not otherwise.
Got it. And so what was the thought process in giving ECLGS loan to such customers when, I mean, we have seen 0.6% of slippages coming from these. So why didn't we give ECLGS?
Probably they're one of the very few where we have kind of started extending ECLGS loans also to our inclusive finance customers, though it was a small amount. It could be varying anywhere between 2,000 to 10,000 rupees. The intent was in terms of, in our inclusive finance customer segment across the board, there is a very thin line between making the being in touch with the customer and pursuing follow, or rather making them feel like defaulters. And this was completely an event which is beyond the control. Usual delinquencies or a default happens either out of natural calamities or out of any external disturbances. This was a time where it kind of impacted across the board, and hence most of the defaults we saw or delays we saw, it did not really border into default, which meant that it was more circumstantial in nature rather than intentional in nature or inability to pay for various other reasons. So as things improve, we are pretty confident that as long as you're in touch with the customer and customer is transacting with you, then except for the fact that the loan tenor may get extended from instead of 24 months, maybe 30 months, these customers will come back into the paying fold and continue to remain probably very good customers.
Got it. And sir, one of the leading MFI bank has used a CGFMU guarantee, which is from the central government. Have we used that scheme for us, or are we planning to use?
It's scheme, MFI scheme. Yeah, we are planning to.
Okay.
This is a pretty large amount.
Yeah, can you give some details like how much of the benefit we can get from that scheme?
See, the scheme broadly states that 50% of whatever we kind of want to take guarantee should be given to MFR 2 and below in terms of microfinance grading. It is not linked to rating. So if you want to kind of have an exposure of, say, 100 crores, you have to necessarily kind of give a disbursement of a minimum of 50 crores to MFR 2 and below. So the universe of that is very limited in terms of absorption. So to the extent where we are able to kind of get such customers where we can extend the loans, equivalent amount of loan can be given for MFR 1 and plus. So the amount is kind of getting frozen, but we are in touch with all good MFIs which are in MFR 2, because once we freeze that amount, we'll also be able to reach out and then extend equivalent amount or little less than the equivalent amount to MFR 1. So it comes with the condition that minimum of 50% should go of the guarantee that we take to MFR 2 and below. That universe is very small in size compared to the overall market of the NBFC MFIs.
Got it. And so the last question is, the interest on advances, which is around 185 crores, how much are we accruing it from the restructured accounts? Because I believe we are still incurring interest from the restructuring accounts as well in this.
So out of this 420 crores of a pool of restructuring, as I said, 53 crores is NPA. So on the remaining roughly around 370 crores, we did accrue interest.
Okay. Thanks. That's it for me, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pranay from Loke Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. So just one quick question around the correction mechanism efficiency. So of course the GNPA seems to be quite stagnant between March and June, and I'm guessing bulk of it is because of the Q1 impact as well. But the question is more so on what are the strategies that the company is adopting to recover these NPAs? And I mean, any on-the-ground collection strategies, let's say beefing up the team or something like that. And what are the timelines that you're looking at for it to sort of normalize from a NPA perspective? Like, are you looking at it for the next 3 months or the 6 months or a year? Do you have some sort of view on that?
Thanks. Well, we kind of mentioned earlier, while our GNPAs are 380 crores, so 220 crores plus 20, 240 crores of this is only 90 plus. So which means there is a continuing paying momentum in terms of these customers. And even within the 90 plus, which is around 6% of the portfolio as of June, 25% of the customers have paid at least one installment either in the month of May or June. It is the ability to kind of be in touch with the customer and do it. And as things are becoming normalized, I think we'll get a fairly good picture at the end of this quarter. How much of that will be paying customers? As long as the customer has paid at least one out of every two installments, you can be fairly confident that it's a question of elongated time. And if they have not paid anything, when things are getting normalized in the month of, say, July, August, and September, that would tend to kind of put pressure in terms of credit loss.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jay Mundra from Batliwala and Karani Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Good evening. A couple of questions, sir. First, on restructuring. So, did you apply any filter when you got that restructuring request, or this is the total request that you received in terms of restructuring?
So I will first talk about the known, rather JLG only. So in that case, so we do apply a filter for giving the restructuring. So somebody should have shown intention of repaying us. So at least one payment in the last 3 months should have been made in that particular quarter. Then only we go ahead for the restructuring because the customer has shown some interest. While in case of a non-microfinance, we do go by request to request based on, and we also assess the financial condition of the customer. We do the entire credit process for the customer. Then only we do the restructuring. So in microfinance, we apply the filter, while in non-microfinance, it's based on the request.
Understood. So I'm just curious to know that the people, while, let's say, if I look at our microfinance book, only 63% of them are current. And the rest of them are into, lagging or delinquent or have shown early signs of delinquency. Why would they not apply for restructuring, or safe to assume that they would have applied and you would have said no? I mean, you would have restricted the restructuring.
No, while you look at 63% is current 62.78, there is 1 to 30 bucket which is 15.18 and 31 to 60. As long as the customers are paying and kind of have one installment due or two installments due, and continue to pay, they're fairly confident that they'll come up the curve rather than asking for a restructuring. And usually the restructuring was limited to one or two installments, which is due, kind of being given an extension, rather than in terms of asking for a future installments. Because the ability to pay the few current installments is pretty high once they're back in business. But what they will not be able to cover up is the backlog, and that also we are not forcibly kind of making sure that they're paying. As long as they're paying in, continued, as I said, that the fundamental way in which you handle this customer is, as long as you're in touch and the customer is paying, treat them as regular customers rather than treating them as delinquent customers, which will be a little different from probably other asset class products.
Understood. And in terms of disbursement, if you can broadly bifurcate the disbursement to the delinquent customers and maybe zero DPD kind of a customer, just to understand, I mean, it is not unusual for a business of this type to handhold customer, just to get an understanding that how much disbursement actually went to the zero DPD kind of a customer.
I don't have the exact number. I can broadly say that it will be very, very insignificant. If at all, it will be there. So where we really nudge the customer is to really come back on current. And then when the principal outstanding is substantially lower, we'll give another loan. We have not given any top-up loans where the customer is already in delinquency and kind of, they've repaid the installment post taking the loan. Very, very, I don't think there'll be anything significant at all. Not as a process, we don't have a policy to kind of pursue that.
Just adding on to that, majority of the disbursement of the 360 crores that we did basically was done to our customers who were paying and were current. and some new funding which basically happened. Again, this is appropriate credit assessment of the customer in the market. Like what Bhaskar mentioned, it's only to the customer who is making payment and is sitting into very early bucket, where basically we have taken into consideration, disbursement to such customer on closing off their particular loan from their side.
Understood. And if I look at the slide, let's say 15, which gives the business unit-wise collection efficiency for the month of July, the microfinance has come, it has increased from 67 to 78, right? But it is still low as compared to peers at 78. So, considering the July collection efficiency 78, why did you not go for contingent provisioning when we have already, when we have already, let's say, showed a loss? I mean, why not go for extra provisioning or contingent provisioning?
We believe that we have kind of fairly provided for, as in when it comes, we recognize it quick. But the fact is that the 78% is a one EMI adjusted collection. That is, if the customers are around 12 to, as of July, if you look at it, the one EMI adjusted is around probably 79%. But there are customers who would have paid at least 1 month prior, that will be around 10%. So it will be around 89-90% of the customers who have paid at least one installment. Do not see anything that will require a provisioning for this set of customers.
And also, just to add on this, so if you compare to the other SOPs, I think, as I said earlier, so we have also been generated billing for restructuring. So if I just consider the water restructuring we have done in the current quarter, so our collection efficiency will jump to 87%.
I think the right way to see, probably the way in which we would like to really see, is in terms of the entire billing. The denominator has to remain the same, and then you kind of compute how many customers are paying. Suppose you'll have to give a moratorium and remove it off from the billing of the particular month, then the denominator comes down, the numerator remains the same, it may look. But to really truly recognize, there are two tools we do it. One is the one EMI adjusted, and one EMI adjusted either for that month, at least they paid for the previous month, specifically in the month of April, May, June. And then that gives you the overall percentage of customers who are paying. And if there is anything, it is just a skip of one installment timing issue, rather either ability issue or an intentional issue. So whenever we feel that we'll have to adequately provide for, we kind of recognize that upfront and provide for it.
Right. So, just to get it clear, the 78% numbers reflects all such customers which may have paid one full EMI at least, even if, let us say, they have paid it for the month of April or let's say May, right? Otherwise, is this right? Or it reflects only for the month of July?
So just clarifying, 78% is for the month of July itself. So the due was basically there for the full customer base, and the collection was made of at least one EMI for 78% of our customer. That was for July itself. That is not from any of the previous months. It's for the month of July, due was there and the collection was made.
So all restructured accounts would have had their installments generated for the month of July. So it includes all of that as well.
And also in terms of provisioning, just an additional point. So you would have seen customers from the delinquent pool, around 75% of the customers also made a payment either in June or July. So it also shows the confidence of the customers as also paying back.
Okay. And sir, I think there was a question on this, like you have CGT SME for SME. It looks like there's a similar scheme for microfinance borrowers, which is also central government scheme, which is called Credit Guarantee Fund for microfinance borrowers, right? Just the way you have CGT SME, wherein if an individual borrower slips, you probably may have a guarantee from the, if you have taken that guarantee, just the way CGT SME would work. So do you have any of the portfolio which is guaranteed under that, CGT MFI scheme kind of a thing? Because having one of the largest MFI focused bank, they had unveiled this scheme.
We haven't. While we considered earlier, it is around the minimum premium is 1%, and the premium will be dependent on in terms of your claim ratios. So in a normalized basis, had you looked at it, on a 3,000 crore portfolio per year, outgo would have been 30 crore, which of course can be passed on to the customer as guarantee charges. So while we considered long back, we have not pursued it, but we are later looking at the scheme at this point of time.
Okay. Right. And just two, three data points, sir. I mean, if you can share the movement of GNPA, as in how much was the fresh slippages, and how much was the recovery upgrade and write-off, I think you have already given.
Sir,
yeah, so opening was 391 crores, so then we added around 101 crores during the quarter. Then 35 crores we also recovered from the opening, despite being the second wave and lockdowns. And then 78 crores of a write-off, so that's how we are at 381 crores.
Right. And just to clear, let's say the people who are already delinquent and they are paying, this quarter, I mean, once they pay, this will be adjusted in the recovery, right? I mean, that is the way it should work.
Yeah, it is recovery.
Right.
Okay, and the last, it will be going proportionally to the interest portion, like EMI. It's a payment of EMI. So these are not write-offs. These are EMI adjusted.
Right. Right. And the last question, sir, if you can state your cost of SA, what would be your blended cost of savings account?
So CASA put together is around 4.4% we are having, both put together. So we look at together as well. And sorry, what's the second question?
Sorry, cost of SA. And if it is substantially lower, because your cost of deposit and cost of funds are probably same, at 7.4, 7.5. So why not swap, you know, deposit in favor of deposit versus the fixed tenor bonds or borrowings?
Hey, our SA rate currently we have reduced as well over the last year. So currently the average yield on the SA would be around 5%. Okay. And I think you would have seen, and this is SA also requires a large sourcing cost as well. Not that we are not focusing on SA and CA as well. But if you see our deposit rates, we've been able to reduce from 9.5% to nearly around 6.5% in a 1.5 years time. So that's the kind of a delta we have got there compared to SA, where you cannot reduce significantly. There is a possibility that there is money outflow can also happen because somebody would have parked some amount, and because of the rates only they would have parked, so it flows out significantly. So I think the delta varies significantly in terms of the term deposits compared to the CASA. And as I said earlier, it's not that we are defocusing on SA. It's continue to focus, but as of now, our main focus was to increase the retail deposit share rather than only SA.
Even within SA, we are looking at more at transactional accounts where the flow will lead to float rather than on the price arbitrage, the cash management price coming and sitting in your SA account, you are paying a much higher. So we kind of reduce that to focus more in terms of granular, steady state, and keep increasing over a period of time. In terms of deposits, the focus shifted a year back in terms of completely granular, retiring majority of the bulk deposits as they are maturing, unless otherwise they are coming at a pricing which is substantially lower. But as a strategy, always we wanted as a fledgling bank in the first formative years, we wanted to have a right mix of our own funds, which is net worth, and in terms of refinance, where they are contractual in nature. And currently, we are carrying an excess liability liquidity of closer to around 1,500 crores as of 30th of June, which as the business momentum picks up, we will be able to bring it optimally down to probably 600 to 700 crores. There is a negative carry which we are carrying on the P&L and the balance sheet, but it's more of a conscious strategy of managing liquidity in testing times.
Right. But I don't know, sir. I mean, it looks like you are restricting yourself because it looks like you may not have such pool of, you know, transactional customers also, I mean, on your asset side. And if you are not offering, let us say, differentiated star rate, it may be very difficult for you to acquire customers in the first place. So, but anyway, I mean, because earlier some of the other MFI banks, small finance bank, they had this strategy, then they changed course and then they started offering higher rates. I just wanted to understand your strategy that you would continue with the, let's say, 5% SA rate and you will acquire probably gradually build the base there. Is that what you see?
See, it has to be pull. The very fact that CASA is a very desired ratio in terms of measurement of stickiness of the liabilities, it is supposed to be retail, it is supposed to be transactional. The moment it gets priced closer to your FD rates, then it is a pure pricing arbitrage. This is our thought process. The way in which we really want to build it is in terms of whether we can have strong products which will really have a full impact. It's a time-taking process. So 15 becoming 16 and becoming 20 will take time. And that is how I think CASA is built, which really kind of not only remains sticky, which is meaningful in terms of your overall pricing. So the cost of acquiring CASA is significantly higher. So it has to be meaningful. It has to stay there. So we have recently introduced a product this month, which is a wellness product where we are giving a top-up insurance of around 25 lakhs, complimentary, for with the minimum AMB requirement of 3 lakh rupees. Now we'll have to kind of focus on such project where products where there is a pull, which kind of makes it more meaningful in terms of pricing and stays with you longer. And that's what we are pursuing as a strategy. We are not in a hurry to kind of scale it up by pricing it out.
Right. Understood, sir. Thank you so much for your explanation and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anand Bhavnani from White Oak Capital. Please go ahead. Mr. Bhavnani, your line is unmuted. Please go ahead with your question. Mr. Bhavnani, I would request you to unmute yourself if muted from the handset. There is no response from the line of the current participant. The next question is from the line of Nikhil Valecha from SBI Life Insurance. Please go ahead.
Sir, from the exchange disclosure, I noticed that two key people have left the company recently. Mr. Bhavin is CFO and even Mr. Sridharan, who is our CIO. So this happened within a span of 1 month. Can you highlight, sir, why, all of a sudden the two key people have left within a span of 1 month?
Yeah, as far as Bhavin, it's not kind of a sudden. He has been wanting to pursue his entrepreneurial venture. So he kind of, that's the reason that he's moving on. But he'll be here for till we identify the next CFO and transition it. So it's not a time bound of 1 month, 2 months. As far as Anmani Sridharan is concerned, for personal reason, he has to relocate to his hometown to take care of his parents. And that's the reason he moved on. So both are for specific reasons other than professional reasons.
And have we finalized the people who are replacing them? And if you can share the name?
We'll not be able to share the name right away, but for technology, we have the incumbent, the person will be joining in shortly. As far as CFO is concerned, we are in the process of finalizing.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anand Bhavnani from White Oak Capital. Please go ahead. Mr. Anand Bhavnani, your line is unmuted. Please go ahead with your question. Mr. Bhavnani, I would request you to unmute yourself if muted from the handset.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, sorry, there was some issue with the line. So my question is on the industry. Given the two COVID waves, which have significant challenges in the industry, do you see competitive intensity currently lower and to stay low for a foreseeable future? So if you can give some color on the competitive intensity in the microfinance industry, and how do you see it spanning out over next, at least, let's say, 3-4 quarters?
We are not really seeing any reduced intensity per se, but what's really kind of clearly playing out is that you will have to be kind of very prudent, and it won't really kind of work out as a strategy of funding more and more, considering that this is unsecured. So really understanding the requirement of a customer becomes paramount importance and specifically plays out in times like this. Equally, I think what SMBs have an opportunity to do so, or any bank catering to this customer segment, is that you should look beyond term loan products, simple unsecured term loan product of 2 years tenor, and keep doing more of that. So we introduced a Smile OD product, which we believe will really make it far more sticky rather than making it completely transactional and transactional to an extent of just taking a term loan and repaying the installment. We have onboarded closer to 4 lakh customers, around closer to 3 lakh have got activated. There are 3 operational challenges in terms of educating our own staff and in terms of educating the customers that there's a credit available as and when you need, and repayable as and when you have a surplus, not to really kind of keep carrying it forward. So those are the products which has to be built, which will kind of build the customer stickiness beyond a single product relationship. I think that's an opportunity. Probably it's playing out more clearly than it would have played out in the past. For instance, a customer who's kind of generally doesn't really require a larger loan, but just want to have a standby credit just in case they require for, could be anything, for a medical emergency or for a school fee. Earlier model required that the customer takes out the money when the center is ready, when the company is ready, and the money probably does not stay in the household till their actual requirement comes up. So such are the products we'll have to really build, and including one of the products we have been focusing is in terms of, because we have an underlying account open, for the first 2 years we did not really open a savings account for our inclusive finance customers, till such time we realized that the value proposition. So once we kind of knew that we are going to be now offering small ticket ODs, we opened that and then matched the customer in terms of PMJJY and PMSBY, not so much in terms of a cross-sell, but making sure that they are kind of protected with minimum insurance, which is 330 rupees for a 2 lakh rupees for herself and for the spouse. So those relationship products, I think, you know, suddenly it's playing out that you'll have to look at it more intensely than looking at it as a pure lending of a term loan and collecting it back and building more and more volumes of that. That's our learning out of this.
After a crisis, we typically see competitive intensity lowering, and you mentioned it's not happening. What are the reasons that it's not happening?
We are not seeing it immediately, but what the way it will play out is that if you've got a strong pool of good customers, you have been able to keep in touch, and more importantly, ability to hold your workforce in a motivated manner and manage your costs. So as it kind of, you know, the tide settles down and we'll be able to see it, probably you will see the intensity probably moderating. I don't know whether I would call it reducing, but it's not going to be that increased funding for existing customers. That is, the past repayment track record as the only way of analyzing the credibility of the customer will not be the norm anymore. We'll have to look at various other data points. So it's too early to kind of, you know, call out in terms of whether it will reduce or whether it will increase, but certainly it's not going to be intensifying more, but we haven't really seen any signs of it abating at this point of time.
Thank you. I'll come back in a few.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepak Agarwal from Axis Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, sir. So I wanted to understand in terms of how should we look at FY22 from here. So broadly at 111 crores provision this quarter, closer to 2.7-2.8% credit cost for the quarter. Annualized, it's a very high number. So is it like the worst is over? Hopefully, unless there is a third wave coming, it should substantially fall from here starting Q2. And second is in terms of growth, how should we build growth from here?
So look, I'll put it this way. While we kind of thought that we've seen the worst probably by March, because the momentum and the end of towards March was looking really, really robust. No, none of us really foresaw the higher impact of COVID-2 really playing out. But the heartening thing to see is that the COVID-2 made sure that, you know, we were able to keep in touch with the customer, which was not the case as far as COVID-1. It was completely playing blind, I would say, was COVID-1. COVID-2, unexpected, but certainly I think, you know, we were far more fortressed to kind of, you know, face the situation in terms of just focus, in terms of being in touch with the customer. As long as you have kind of, you know, the way in which we look at it, not as a general commentary, is that if you are able to stay in touch with your good customers and you are not pressurizing them excessively to a point where they start feeling that they are defaulters, they are delinquent, they will come back, kind of, as long as they pay one installment, as long as you are in touch. I guess that, you know, as of now what we see is that based on various other data cuts, looks like the worst is over as far as at this point of time is concerned. We are seeing the momentum in terms of business, and as Rahul was mentioning earlier, we are not looking at funding delinquent customers to kind of make it current. Purely, normally, purely based on the track record, there are actually quite a few around 3-4 lakh customers that have not borrowed at all from us in the last 1 year and are current. So can we really, how do we really dig deep into those customers, because they are not credit hungry, so to say. They will borrow as and when it's required. If we keep up the business momentum, we opened closer to 77 branches during last year. They are business ready, but we haven't really put them to use. And in situations like this, if you are fortress in terms of both capital adequacy and liquidity, and more importantly in businesses like this, a strong motivated team, and kind of we gave a good salary revision only for the field employees in the inclusive finance segment in the month of October, following it up now with July. And if they and took care of all that was required, more in terms of saying that, no, we are there to kind of back up, you will see the momentum really picking up. If this plays out the way that we are wanting to see, we will see a substantial higher momentum, and more importantly, we will not see much instances of small-time employee fraud where the customer paid, not reported. So those are the qualitative things we are making sure that stays intact. So when things come to normalcy, then I think the momentum will be, not to call it exponential, but which will be far higher than what we would have thought 3 months back was possible.
So, but any sense on the credit costs? So like this 110 crore number, obviously this is a one-off, but is it like 50 crores for the next couple of quarters? It could be even below 25 crores. Ideally, it should have been below 25 crores, right? The kind of pain we have already taken.
Deepak, I think when we took the entire impact of the Q2, what we thought has to recognize upfront, we would. And this is purely, as Bhavin explains, completely a technical write-off. It is not a write-off where the field continues to see these customers as installments falling due and pursuing it. As we kind of know, it's closer to around 20% of the 90 plus customers are paying, and 90 plus itself is lower than the GNPA of 381 crores. It's 300 crores in odd is the 90 plus GNPA. And as long as we are able to, the focus is to, can we really kind of, you know, focus and get at least 25% of this 90 plus, which itself is lower than the GNPA number. Broadly, I think in our view, we have provided comfortably, probably recognize it upfront now. But at the field level, at the kind of, you know, anybody kind of seeing it, for them, we pursue the customer as if the customer is continuing to be a regular customer. So that was a Q1. Unlikely that I would rather say in a limited manner that it not need, should not be taken as an extrapolation of things to come at this point of time.
Sure. Okay. And in terms of geographical concentration, so any thoughts there, sir? Like obviously you're hit harder because Maharashtra is our home geography and lockdowns are far more severe. Any thoughts there, or you think obviously now things hopefully are looking up and opening? Anything there?
Maharashtra, Tamil Nadu have been a very good states, except for Maharashtra got impacted during demon, but it was purely in pockets of Vidarbha. This time you kind of saw the impact across, including in places like Mumbai or Pune, where it was the intensity of the COVID than anything else. So I think we'll have to kind of, you know, stay on and then do it. But of course, by the way, that we open branches in Rajasthan and Uttar Pradesh and a few more branches in Karnataka, there will be a geographical diversification which will happen. And there's no point in spreading yourself too thin, in being in too many states without a meaningful portfolio. At 3,000 crores and kind of, you know, growing even at 25-30%, I think the number of states we are present is good enough. But we'll have to intensify our presence in those states. While instead of having a marginal presence in states like Uttar Pradesh or Rajasthan, probably we'll enhance the presence. As to the answer of the previous question, we'll also have to see how the thing is playing out. There'll be unified regulations which will be coming in. There'll be lots of changes. I think if you're robust enough, we do that. And one of the things which we learned and kind of wanting to really implement is that can we build stickiness with the customer which is continually transacting rather than a one-time transaction which is as a term loan. Fairly done a good job in terms of acquiring the customers to the platform. Now it is time to kind of do that execution with thorough education of how it could be of use. As the digital things are picked up, so if the customer, if we are able to connect the OD account to the any digital channel where they will be able to make their bill payment and give them the sense of operating and how they can get included, the way in which we will build stickiness with the customers will be far different than we would have built it a year back without any such product. So we'll have to, I think I would call it this an year of complete execution based on far more drilling down of a customer data. Earlier, the main data that which we looked at the customer across the board was just the repayment track record. So now this the moment has given lots of data which you can see in which location and which part, which centers, what is those behavior. And still around 70% of the customers in the limited sense of kind of quote-unquote are AAA customers kind of where they are not used or they are still robust enough to repay in spite of all the challenges. How do you really mint more such customers and build around it? It continues to be our focus. So we have taken all that we think that will be difficult at this point of time, but fairly to the management, we don't think that it is more of an extrapolation or partly we covered at this point of time.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Renish Harishbhai Bhua from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. Thanks for the opportunity. So, sir, couple of questions. So, one is on the July collection, which is at 78%. And if I heard you correctly, you are saying the this collection is basically only for the July month. And let's say if customer has paid for a past month, that will get adjusted into past month's due and not in the July collection. Is that the correct understanding, sir?
Yeah, Perfect.
So which means this 78% of the pool is basically the current pool as of now, right?
No, it could also be considered customers in various buckets of delinquencies. So it could be only a 90+ customer who has paid one installment during this period.
Okay, so then how it can get included in the July collection if he is already PAR 90+? Let's say on July, when it is giving one EMI, for all practical purpose, it should be get adjusted into, let's say, April or May EMI, right?
No, as I said, it is kind of, you know, shows the behavioral pattern of the customer. The customer is making the payment, while allocation will happen to the first installment which is due. Whether how many of the customers have paid at least one EMI? What will pertain to the same month if it is a current customer? It will pertain to the previous month if it is a 1 to 30 customer, and so on and so forth. How many of the customers have paid? This is short of all microfinance loans predominantly are not more than 2 years. So as long as the customer is paying, he has got two dues, no problem. But he pays this month, he doesn't even pay next month, he even slips into 90+. As long as that momentum is kept, instead of 24 months, probably it will get over in 30 months. But then part of that is circumstantial. I kind of want to keep it going, and I think that is what we are seeing, lots of richness in terms of intention of the customer coming back as things up. This, I think, not to be confused with the previous crisis we would have seen, which triggered by anything external, but then becomes far more internalized and almost shows up from an intention point of view over a period of time. This time, I think we are completely segregating that because there has been no other impact except for an impact which is impacting all of us.
Got it. So, sir, and one more clarification. On this 78%, the denominator will have the restructured portfolio as well, right? I mean, along with the gross NPA pool.
Absolutely. So that billing continues to kind of reflect on a denominator. If I pull that out, for example, for 10%, then the denominator would have become 90. 79 will become 79. So 79 by 90 will probably be 85-90%. So this is average. Billing continues in the month of August, July, June, July, August.
Got it. So, sir, just two more questions on this stress pool. First, on the restructuring book, okay, so wherein, you know, we can see that clearly the collection is far lower, especially in the JLG book, it is like hardly 23%. So, if you can just give some color, you know, in terms of what kind of restructuring we have done, maybe we have granted only a principal moratorium or it's a complete payment holiday. And let's say if it is a only principal holiday, and even if on the interest side, they are paying 23%. So, you know, what confidence it gives you that this extra pool is sort of recoverable and will not have higher slippages from this pool?
I'll let Rahul answer this in terms of data.
Just adding one particular, actually post 30th June, in the month of July, our restructured pool on the JLG base basically have made about 36% of the customers have made payment to us in the month of July. So we've, there's a focus which has sort of, you know, come in. One is basically as unlock measures have sort of, you know, sort of opened up in Tamil Nadu and Karnataka and Madhya Pradesh, you know, we have seen basically increase in terms of these particular customer being able to sort of, you know, being met and sort of, you know, make the payment. So we continue to sort of, you know, build momentum on that side for these customers to sort of, you know, make payment. You can see that 22.6% as far as the June end number has significantly jumped up to about 36% by about July. So we continue to sort of, you know, bring that particular focus on the restructured pool.
Give some light, let's say, what sort of restructuring we have done. So we have provided only principal moratorium or it is the complete payment all the
way? What the amounts, maybe Bhavan can expand on it. As of June, say there are two installments overdue. So that has got restructured and got extended at the end of the tenor. And then the billing for July starts as usual, continues to be as it was earlier.
So there is no holiday period that we have given. That the billing basically has continued even after we have done the restructuring as our June end. And as Bhaskar just explained, basically that particular amount has got capitalized on the interest which is due.
And what is the total non-paying customer pool we have as on July? Let's say customer who have not paid us anything from March to July.
Just
generally measure on a 2-month basis, probably give a 2-month basis of releases.
So, like as we mentioned, on the delinquent pool, basically as at June end, we had about 68% of our customers who have made payment over 2 months. We have about 67% of the customers which are in current bucket itself. So 68% of our customers basically were making payment over 2 months period, which were delinquent as of June end. And this number itself has sort of, you know, increased to about 75% as of July. So the delinquent pool, which is making payment, has jumped up to about 75% as at July.
Of course, I mean, this pool will also have some customers who are not paying at all. I mean, we might have recognized them as NPL as well. But there could be some customer, will be sitting under PAR 1 plus and were still not paying.
Maybe Rahul can add, 60% of our customers were in current, or the 60% in inclusive finance were current. And the customers were non-delinquent, minus 60 is 40% of the customers as of July. Of 40% of the customers, 75% customers paid at least one of the installments in the month of June and July. So 25% of 40%, I would call it 10% of the customers in inclusive finance by past value, but the ones who have not paid anything in the month, either in the month of June or in the month of July. And
okay.
All of these customers are recognized as part of, some of these customers rather as part of even the GNPA pool. So this 10 is very close to the 9.4%, 9.5% which is reflecting in the GNPA.
Got it. So basically you are saying that whatever the non-paying customer pool we were having as on June, July are already there in the gross NPA pool.
Part of it, not all. Yeah. But the one thing to note is that usually in a normal circumstances, any customer in 90 plus in a JLG portfolio will tend towards a credit write-off. This situation, like as of now, what you see is that around close to 25% of the customers have been paying customers even in 90 plus as of June, and which will likely that would have been higher in the month of July. So overall, across the board, the way we look at it, 40% of the portfolio of JLG as of June was delinquent, and of this 40%, around 65% customer paid. So I would say that 10% of the customers have not made the payment in the month of June and July.
Got it, sir. Okay, sir, good enough. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you very much for participating in the call. Please reach out to our colleagues, Chintan Shah or Amit Singh. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amit.
Capital Private Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.